Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers journey through the wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends, Tom and Harry. Join us as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. Your hosts along this journey are Terry Farrell, our statuesque science officer, Armin Shimmerman, our merchant extraordinaire, Robert Duncan McNeil, our favorite helmsman and Warp 10 lizard, and myself, Garrett Wong, your forever ensign. And today we have Terry joining us. Hi, yay! Terry. Woo! Let's get into some birthdays right now.
Yes.
Birthdays. Yes. Yay. To talk about.
Okay. Right off the bat, we have Lauren Rivers on July 23rd. Happy birthday to Lauren.
Happy birthday, Lauren.
Happy birthday, Lauren.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's start with some poetry. Robert Duncan McNeil, go with your limerick.
Well, here's what's interesting.
Huh?
I usually do my limericks far ahead of time, but I didn't do it until about 10 minutes before we recorded.
Oh, this is like speed limericks, sort of like speed dating. I can't wait to hear this.
But here's what's crazy. I ended up doing two limericks because I did the first one. I'm like, oh, I don't know if it really got in. Let me try another one.
You did two in 10 minutes?
The pressure of the clock
made
me more creative.
Wow.
We'll see.
It doesn't always work that way.
Before you jump into this, I just want to say, isn't there something where actors get together with director and they film a short film in one day and they write it? Cast it, film
24
it.
Hour films.
Yeah.
Or
yeah, yeah, yes, whatever.
Yeah.
This is kind of what you did. Yeah.
I did.
Go, Robbie. Let's hear it.
That'd be
Let's
fun.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go with my first limerick for the alternate. Goes like this. Dr. Mora's the Bajoran Odo likes least. He shows up. Odo's anxiety is increased. At the end of the day, if your feelings you can't say, you might turn into a beast.
Oh, that's not bad.
Wow.
I really like that.
That was pretty
tight.
Fun.
Yeah.
It was good.
Let's hear number two. Let's hear number two.
Limerick number two.
Here we go.
The doctor returns from Odo's past. He's found Odo's homeworld at last. They steal a shrine without permission. It changes Odo's composition. When Odo gets mad, everyone should hold fast.
I like that one.
I like that too.
Yeah.
All right. I couldn't design.
I don't want to read mine now. That one, yours is so good. I feel shamed.
Why?
You are the brilliant, intelligent.
Come on. Statuesque. Oh, sorry.
Blue fingernailed lady.
The blue fingernailed lady with glasses. Glasses wearing lady. Come on. Let's hear that poem, Terry Farrell.
Oh my gosh. But really, Robbie?
Yes.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
Both of them.
I was happy. I felt like I was in the pocket. I was in the zone today.
You were.
You were. You should have just kept going.
To do two in 10 minutes is amazing.
It really is.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Very impressed.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Terry Farrell, let's hear your poem.
I love Terry's poetry.
Me too.
I always feel like I'm being set up to fail.
No.
That's so much pressure. Can I rewrite now?
No.
I've got 10 seconds.
You have 10 minutes.
You have 10 seconds to rewrite that.
10 seconds.
Yes.
Okay. The alternate. My poem. Odo fights for his autonomy, but lacking emotional maturity, this uncovers deep-rooted anger. His internal pain leads to danger. Dr. Mora's eventual realization of his insufferable domination clears the way for mutual respect and adoration.
Oh.
It wasn't like a classic poem. Was that okay?
Yeah, it was okay. It's so crazy because when I'm listening to that, I'm thinking, you're like writing rap lyrics. Like you could be like the first Trek female rapper. Like that makes it successfully. Those are like really great lyrics that you could rap. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm pretty excited.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
It was really good. You captured the story I just capture like a joke, but you capture like
no, you the captured feelings the story.
And
yeah,
oh, you, well,
I love I, your stuff.
Thank you. The first thing I started to write was about parents, and it didn't come out poetry wise, but I just started to kind of write a diary about how I felt about the episode first.
Yeah.
And then I had to sleep on it. And then the poem came to me.
Nice. Oh.
But I realized I need to have a little bit of, I don't know, a thought process about it before I write it.
Good
because
for
otherwise
you.
I'm just trying to think of things to rhyme.
Yeah.
Right.
That's
and then
what
it's
I do.
super right. The stressful thing is like, oh, that sentence, but I don't know how to, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Haiku.
Yeah.
The lean, mean haiku.
And like Robbie, it was last second for me too. I had to do last second as well. And we basically met at the half hour, right? At 3:30 your time, right? Basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote this at 3:28, so within 2 minutes of chopping.
Holy cow.
Hey, Robbie's dealing with his life. I'm dealing with my life. We have things that are just taking our time up right now. So sometimes we come in under the wire, and I came in with less than a minute. I would say probably a minute left before we had to jump on when I started
writing.
Oh, my.
No, I did mine right before my acting class, which is right before I met you guys. So it was like, I couldn't have done it during class.
Right. No, that wouldn't have worked. Okay. Here's my haiku for the alternate. Dr. Dad Mora, a life form found but escapes. It was just Odo. That's it.
I dig it.
The lean mean haiku. It always,
yeah.
It always works.
Oh, lean mean fighting machine.
There you go. There you go. All right.
Teleplay was Bill Dial. I don't know who Bill Dial has. He written on the show before?
I don't recognize that name. Terry, do you see? I don't remember that name at all. It looks like a first
time.
No,
because you know what? We didn't we didn't really know everybody.
We didn't get to meet them. Yeah.
They never came on set. They never came on set.
I wonder if
Bill
Dial.
Well, not often.
I wonder if he was a like a freelance writer or something.
Probably. I know they had a lot of them.
Yeah. Possibly.
So if we don't recognize the name, it just means they're not
but
on the,
did they, but would they
the
hire
team of writers.
True. But would they hire a freelance writer to write the teleplay, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had some on Voyager. Yeah.
Okay.
They had
okay.
like outside assignments. Yeah.
Yeah. And there were also people that they bought scripts from.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I know that for a fact. That's how Rene Echevarria became a writer. They bought his script. He sent his in. So he comes in later.
Well, I will say I just clicked the link for Bill Dial's credits and things.
Yes. What's he got?
He's a comedy writer.
What?
Which is interesting. Yeah. He wrote mostly comedy.
Well,
he also
goodness.
Wrote for our show, which,
you know,
I don't remember.
Okay. Now that you brought that up, that makes sense. Because that scene with Cisco, with Benjamin and Jake, dad and son scene, came off very much like a sitcom to me, that very first scene between the two of them that we see in the beginning of the episode. And I thought, God, this is really sitcom-y. And now I know Bill Dial.
He did a lot of comedy.
Yeah.
He also was an actor.
Okay.
Which is fascinating.
Anything of note that you saw there in his acting credits?
I'm trying to find.
While you're trying to find that, I also want to say that Jim Trombetta, who the story was by Bill Dial and Jim Trombetta, and that's a name that we've seen before, Jim Trombetta. The idea for this episode came to Jim Trombetta when he realized that if a shapeshifter was suffering from multiple personality disorder, not only would he go around exhibiting different personalities, but different bodies. That's interesting little.
Interesting.
From the Star Trek Deep Space Nine companion. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, Bill Dial wrote on Sliders, WKRP in Cincinnati.
Ooh.
Simon and Simon.
Ooh. I used to watch that show.
Harper Valley PTA.
I did not watch that.
he did a lot of things.
I like it.
Yeah. Bill Dial also wrote one episode of Voyager. Eye of the Needle was the episode he wrote for us.
What?
Yes.
With Telek Ramor, the Romulan? Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Crazy, huh?
Yeah.
Well, Bill Dial, he wrote the script. He also sadly passed away in 2008. Very young. He was 64 years old. So.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Yeah. Definitely young. Yeah, sorry to hear that.
I know.
James Sloyan. Either of you work with James Sloyan, Dr. Moropol? before?
No, did no? not. I okay. never have.
The other part.
No. But wasn't he on, was he in that Shonda Rhimes show with?
See, Young and the Restless, General Hospital. I'm just looking at his credits. The Sting. You think he was a TV show? Is that what you're saying? Oh, yeah, he was in Jatrell. He was Jatrell.
What language was that? He was what?
He was in. I know he was in.
He was Jatrell, the guy that.
Oh, he was on Voyager, Terry.
Yes. Okay. Robbie, Jatrell is the scientist that came up with the cascade bomb that killed the Neelix's people. Episode. Yes. That's why his voice was so familiar sounding in this one. My goodness.
There you go. With Kerry Washington, and she was the fixer.
So we did work with him, Robbie. You and I both worked with him.
Scandal.
Was he in Scandal?
I'm looking right now. Partial filmography.
Because I was thinking that's what he looked like. No. Was one of the actors in Scandal. No.
No, his credits stopped. Did he pass? Nope. I guess he's still alive. His credits stopped in 2008. He doesn't do anything
else. He just wanted to retire. Like just stop. Some maybe. Of us do.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's like, how much is left? Why be stressed?
Interesting little factoid from the interwebs is that the original plan was to have Rene Aubergenois play both roles.
Well, it's interesting. Wow. It's interesting
that's
you
a
say
great
that.
Great idea. Yeah.
Because they made up Mora with hair like Odo.
Yeah.
All of his look looked very much like Odo. So you can see that Odo sort of modeled his physical appearance.
I wonder if Rene was disappointed. And,
well, what happened was they did the calculations of time because he would have to be going in and out of two different makeup looks entirely.
Oh, yeah.
They said, well, a 7-day episode is now going to take 14 days if we have Rene play both. So let's cast an actor to play him.
But that's too bad. Rene would have been awesome playing
both.
He
would have loved to have done that too.
I know.
You know, just the challenge to play both characters would have.
Yeah.
He would have loved that.
That's very cool. I didn't know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What else you got there?
It like tickles the back of my head, but it's not a concrete memory where I go, yeah, I remember that now. I don't, but I just like that would be so cool.
But now you'll remember.
Yeah. Special effects supervisor Glenn Neufeld. Effects supervisor Glenn Neufeld did not like the special effects in this episode. He felt that you saw too much of the monster. He wanted to keep it away from, you know, seeing his the actual monster version of Odo. He didn't want to see so much of that. Dennis McCarthy scored the music. He treated it like a horror film, this episode. Mm-hmm. He basically did the music as if it was a horror film. And he says the orchestra can give you tremendous horror effects, but it can also sound dated. So adding the synthesizer pushes you into the era that we're in now. So that's from, again, Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companions. That was Dennis McCarthy. This was David Carson's last episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine that he directed. Director David Carson. He doesn't direct another one after this. He goes on to direct, I think, Star Trek Generations, the film, and that's it for him. So
he did a great job. I was going to bring that up as we got into it, but
you liked his stuff on this one.
I loved it. It was just elegant and cinematic, and I thought he did a wonderful job. Really good.
Yeah. Okay. Let's jump in.
All right. Well, the first thing that happens, we're in Quark's, and Quark's got some kind of disc in his hand, and he's trying to sell this slice. Basically, we learn that it's a slice of Plague, a Ferengi. He's trying to sell it to another Ferengi, and Odo arrives, asks how much he's asking for this thing. And Quark says 3 strips of latinum. That's when the customer leaves, and Odo pretends he's fascinated by this tradition of Ferengi slicing up their dead bodies and selling them to each other.
Yeah.
And we talked about this in an earlier episode. Was it when she came on, the woman?
I don't which remember episode
was
which
it
episode.
When the woman came on that was in disguise as a man?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Pell, right? Pell. And Ferengi, yes.
We talked. I think it's in that episode that we talked about how Ferengi sell their body parts.
It came up. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So gross.
It's so sorry. Gross.
Just wanted to have a little throwback to keep, you know.
Yes. It keeps coming up, this slicing up Ferengi plan. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Anyway, Odo pretends he wants it, but it turns out that Plague is alive, Odo reveals, and Odo says he wants to know who's in the disc when suddenly a man arrives, and Odo is completely thrown when he sees this man. It's Mora, the doctor that was his caretaker. Quark uses Mora to change the subject with Odo to get out of trouble. acts really friendly, and Odo doesn't want to deal with that, so he takes Moro away. And that was a nice scene. It was a nice turn for Renee. I thought he really you knew
he
that
was
something,
very upset. It was what's about to happen.
Yeah, but David Carson, right out of the gate, just shot a beautiful scene to open the episode. Again, just very elegant, you know, nothing flashy, but just great staging and the simple camera moves that kind of led one actor to another. It was great.
Good. Really good. And the look of Dr. Moro, like you talked about earlier, Robbie, very similar to Odo in terms of the hair, you know, and everything. And essentially that just in the episode, The Forsaken, do you remember when he was in the turbo lift with Loxana Troy? He had, they were talking to each other, and he mentioned that he had modeled his hairstyle after his mentor, which was
Dr.
Moro. So that is that is the throwback the continuity that they kept with that, which is
a great idea. Yeah. It's a great idea, and they found a great actor because it's just a little different, but similar enough that you get it. Yeah,
for sure.
We catch up with Moro and Odo walk and talk. Beautiful long lens shot again, and it captured. David Carson captured the promenade better than I've ever seen. Life, the, you know, the selling of things, the commerce going on. It just was beautiful. But basically Moro says says Odo was rude to Quark, and Odo says he's as friendly as he wants to be.
Right.
You know, he integrates, I integrate as much as I want to.
Yeah.
And he's very emphatic.
Yeah.
Clearly, he's like nervous around this professor, you know.
Yeah, but just right off the bat, I just want to say what a great character development episode. Now we get some answers. We've always wondered about Odo, what's going on with him, and now this is the episode that gives us a little morsel as to who he is. And boy, he is very anxious around his old mentor. It's almost like he's on eggshells in a way.
Well, and Moro is a little intrusive too. He didn't treat him with respect by saying, I'm on my way. A lot of people don't handle surprises well. And Odo, I would never guess Odo to be somebody who's like a, surprise me kind of guy.
Exactly. And even in their dialogue, right? You hear that where he's jumping him all the time, where he's not even letting him speak. So you definitely see that there was a certain dynamic that went on back at the Institute. And it wasn't one of consideration for Odo at all.
Yeah,
the whole father-son thing is very interesting. You know, like a parent can sometimes talk over
their
kid.
And that's that's a better way to say it. It wasn't something of disregard or disrespect, but a fatherly or a parently sort of thing that naturally goes on with a kid. Yeah, you're right.
But it is slightly disrespectful, though, too.
Oh, of course.
He's not treating him like a man. Yes. He's treating him like he's still
a kid,
an underling. And that's disrespectful.
That is the problem then.
Yeah, I was torn with this character throughout, because at moments I was like, oh, you're a jerk, you're just being so rude. And in other moments, he was so clearly moved by Odo's growth.
And yes.
So I was very conflicted with that character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. You're zigzagging the entire episode. Yeah. You're, you know.
Yeah.
I felt the whole, like he didn't handle the empty nest well.
Yes. Exactly.
He's not moving.
Not
forward.
A good
word. It's like mom knocks on the door. Hi, honey. I'm here to visit. Moving in.
So much so he wants him back.
Odo's room at the Institute hasn't changed at all. It's exactly the way it is.
Exactly. Posters on the wall.
Yeah, same posters.
Yes.
All right, we go to the Replimat. Moro asks Odo if he misses the lab and the works, you know, studying Odo's origins, where he came from. And Odo does admit that he misses that discovery part, but he doesn't miss the lab.
Do you think his reaction was too hardcore when he says, like, do you miss, you know, our work? And Odo's like, never. Like, it was very emphatic the way he said it.
I don't think it was too much. Personally, it felt like, what was the trauma that he, I wanted to know more about that trauma.
There you go.
Yeah, I like that
because
a lot.
They didn't know what Odo was when they found him.
Right.
We already kind of know that. So to me, it would feel like I already know Odo's very private man. We know that about him.
Yeah.
And he's very sensitive because there's, as you would be if you're the only person, only being like you.
Yes.
And so it's very intrusive, and imagine that he was studied at the same time. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just he wasn't just mentoring.
Right. He was being studied.
Yeah.
And experimented on, right? Experimented on
that's
in a
gross.
Way.
Yeah. That's awful.
Yeah.
That's awful.
Yeah. Well, Moro does say at the end, he's glad that Odo was, you know, misses that discovery part. He was counting on that. So we don't know what that means. What has he got in store?
Mm-hmm.
We go to Sisko's quarters, and Jake's heading out. He's going to go hang out with Nog. Sisko wants him to study. He's like, what about the Klingon opera you were studying? And Jake says, oh, I did it. I already did it real quick. And Sisko's like, you can't learn Klingon opera by just a quick listen. And they end up kind of bickering about that. I loved Avery's reading when Jake was like, when am I going to need Klingon opera? And Sisko's like, you know, well, he gives a couple things and goes, you may find yourself among some Klingons in a job somewhere.
Yeah.
And the way he did it.
This is the Bill Dial sitcom. This is the sitcom scene I'm talking about. Am I right?
Yeah, didn't
it come off as that? It was very funny.
Well, did you notice too at the top, Jake has this pause, and I loved how Sirak had this little pause, like steeling himself, like, okay, I'm just going to charge out. I'm not going to.
I didn't see that. That's funny.
I'm not going to let him stop me.
Oh,
yeah, he
it.
Has a little pause
that.
Before he braces himself to go. Yeah.
That's great.
And it's, you know, it makes me think of, this is a great family moment. And we haven't had a lot of that lately.
No, we have not.
And some of my favorite stuff, these kind of just domestic, like father-son mm-hmm. scenes. And it doesn't really lead anywhere. There's there's nothing about this that is critical to the story. But
it's very satisfying. It's very satisfying.
It is. Like it's great to see the O'Briens have time together, too.
Yeah, definitely.
It just makes you feel like that living on the space station has a real quality of family life and single life, because otherwise it seems mostly like single life and military kind of vibe rather than.
It's like a workplace show.
Yeah.
But this is, that's not the theme of DS9. DS9 is a family show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta have that stuff.
Voyager's more of a workplace show. We don't have that many family stuff going on in our
No, not
show.
As much.
Yeah.
The last thing that happens is Sisko insists that Nog come over. And so Jake goes to call Nog. They're going to study. He's going to stay right where he is. Odo arrives, though. Odo wants a runabout, tells Sisko that Moro may know where he came from. So that was the big secret that Moro didn't spill earlier. We didn't see it anyway.
Yeah, they had some scans, basically, of the Gamma Quadrant, and they came up with the DNA signature very similar to Odo. So they assumed that this may be his origin planet or origin location. Mm-hmm. But when they talked about having Nog come over, I was actually excited. I thought Aaron Eisenberg was going to somehow pop in.
We never see it, though. This is the only scene.
Yes, dadgummit. Oh, well.
I loved Renee's performance of sharing this information with Sisko, though, when he says, you know, patterns like my own. He says, Dr. Moro thinks he may have discovered the origin of my people, of me.
Yeah.
I love the wording of that, of me. So personal and,
And so layered, distinctly layered. There were definitely a lot of emotions happening for him.
You could see,
conflicted and.
Conflicted, but also excited. Very excited. Really, really want to know, but trying to keep his stuff together at the same time and be professional. Yeah.
We go out to space. We see the runabout Rio Grande whoosh through the wormhole, and we cut inside, and there's a young Bajoran man who's we learn is the other doctor, the Bajoran doctor.
Yeah.
But Mora's explaining his work with Odo to Dax at the top of the scene.
He has nice shiny hair. Did you notice that? He has really
very shiny. Well, it's like Odo. It's that it almost looks like Odo's super perfect comb back hair.
And Dr. Mora's super comb back and slick hair too.
Yes, yes.
A lot of hairspray in that shot.
Yes.
On all of us.
Everybody has hairspray.
Everybody has very shiny hair.
Yeah, Moro's explaining to Dax all of the work, going into all the detail, and Odo explains that he had to teach the doctor, the Bajorans, about who he is. He had to teach them. So there, it's kind of like a father son, you know, who gets credit for all the stuff, you know, dad thinks he gets all the credit and Odo's saying no.
But it was painful. It was a painful conversation.
Yeah. It wasn't the same family conversation with Jake and Ben that we have here. This was definitely a strain.
And there's ego involved.
And the ego's involved.
I'm right. I know better than you.
Yes. Yeah. I'm the father.
I'm the doctor. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is a scene where Odo tries to speak too. He tries as he's talking and he gets cut off.
Every time.
This is getting cut off. And Mora says in the scene that he explains that this work with Odo was the best part of his life. So another sort of fatherly, being a dad is the best thing. It feels like that kind of line, you know? Yes.
Yeah. Yes. Like his foot is in his mouth and he says something nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I must mention that the Bajoran doctor, I failed to mention his name, that co-star who plays Dr. Weld Ram is Matt McKenzie. Matt McKenzie. So I need to throw that out there. Okay.
All right. I'm glad you did. I didn't see his name in the front credits.
Yeah, it's not in the front credits, but it's at the end credits, the under co-stars. So co-star, he was the only one. So I forgot to name him in the beginning. So I'm going to name him now. So there you go. Okay.
Well, they reach the planet in the shuttle or in the runabout, but it's a volcanic planet. So they go into synchronous orbit around the planet. And we cut down to the planet surface. The four of them beam down. Mora, his buddy, Matt McKenzie, Dax and Odo. And they beam down and it's like it looks like a shrine, like a religious, a spiritual kind of place.
Yes.
Like we're in Egypt or Greece.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Greece. It felt very Greek.
Yeah.
And as they move across this beautiful crane shot, which was very, I got to say, the crane shot was very efficient because he opened the opening of them walking through, and then it became another submaster later on. He went back to that crane shot to go to the doctor in the foreground. So again, very clever camera work from David Carson.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the backdrop, gorgeous. What did you think of the backdrop? To me, that threw
tell.
Me.
Because you could tell.
It felt like a rental.
I mean, I could tell. Yeah.
Like an old, like it was 30 years old or 50 years old and they had just rented it.
From the original series.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that. It just looked that way to me. Like it just didn't go with the whole.
Didn't blend well with the environment.
A volcano in the background might have worked better.
Yes. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Because it would help support what they just said.
But all over this shrine and everywhere, there's writing or hieroglyphics or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And they ask Odo if he can read it, but he cannot. He has no idea what it says. And is it Dax who says, let's beam it away? Is that what happens?
Yeah. And I'm thinking, is that a good idea?
Why are you doing that?
Yeah. I said the same thing. I'm like,
can we not just take pictures of it? What the hell?
You can't just steal people's stuff. Like, nobody's around. Let's just take this.
How big are the ceiling?
It looked huge when we were on the planet. How are we going to fit it in my science office?
I know. But the fact that you're so casual about it and no one even questions it. They're like, yeah, let's do it. Let's beam it. Let's take it.
What else do you want to take?
It's like this is somebody's some ancient
nice treasures
secret.
Over there. Some trinkets.
We're beaming it up now.
No, it's sacred. It's a sacred site, and you've just stolen. You know, who knows? This might have been the headstone of the last tribal chief that was buried underneath the shrine. Who knows? But it was
like some aliens come down to Earth. They go to Stonehenge, and they're like, "Oh, this is cool. Let's take it. Let's take Stonehenge."
Exactly. No. Exactly.
Or a pyramid.
But first, before we beam it, our young guest star.
Yes.
Matt McKenzie.
Oh, shiny hair McKenzie. Yes. What
shiny
about
hair McKenzie finds a little petri dish or
That's
puts
right.
in yes. a little petri dish, a little living organism.
Yeah.
Found.
What did it look like to you guys when you first looked at it?
Those magnetic things.
Oh, as if it's being.
The
yes.
magnet.
Oh, yeah,
okay,
it did. Yeah, it looked like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looked like dirt to me.
It looked like a Blue Man Group effect to me. Like they have that kind of stuff going on too.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they got a dish of a petri dish of some kind of dirt life form.
Yes.
And they decide to steal him too.
They steal that too. It's just
they're
like, we don't
kidnap
care. We're
going to
take.
And they're going to steal the shrine.
I'm not proud of my show right now.
I was really angry at you guys.
I was. Yeah.
Well, hold on to that.
But then that's, did you agree? This is what I thought. The minute they beamed out the shrine,
yeah,
that's when the earthquake began. So I thought, yes. Oh, you guys just caused the Indiana Jones Temple of Doom.
That's what it made me think of. I was waiting for darts to come at us. Like, oh my God.
Got to dodge some darts. Come on.
We're losing Matt. We're losing Dr. Matt.
Yes.
Dr. Shiny's gone.
Dr. Shiny. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
He's the red shirt in the scene.
He's the red shirt.
Yeah. And then how about once we start to do it and that happens, put it back. Put it back would have been my thought.
Exactly.
Beam the shrine back. Beam the shrine back, please. Exactly. Yeah. But they don't.
The earthquake. As we're choking on the gas.
Yes.
Beam it back. The earthquake,
by the way, another shout out to David Carson, because I know we don't shake the stage. Like, the actors are just pretending that everything's shaking. And nothing shakes in there. So whatever he did, his sequence of shots and the lenses he chose, I bought it. I bought
and
this whole
amazing earth. Shaking. Was it
and your amazing Chris, shaking.
Chris, oh, except for it wouldn't have been Chris Crossgrove then, because he's with, when we get on to Jonathan. I don't
You're talking about Marvin Rush.
This is Marvin.
Do you remember who Marvin's cameraman was?
It was Joe Chess. I think, right? Young white dude. Yeah.
Really
kind of like Midwest looking guy.
Didn't he move away as soon as we had the earthquakes?
I don't know.
I think he did.
I don't know. But
I think he was the only person who got so freaked out that he left.
Oh, wow.
But they're the ones who shake too.
Yeah.
The camera,
so was it handheld?
Operators,
was it handheld?
And us.
Probably shake. Handheld or some long lenses in there. But whatever David Carson did, I thought
was effective.
Earthquake shaking and the shots were great.
Good.
Well, he's definitely a talented director.
Yeah.
All right.
But they barely get out in time as the smoke engulfs the shot, the lens.
The gas.
Yes.
Yeah. With Fermi, Bashir is treating everyone who's passed out. Yes. Bajorans are really affected. But guess who's not affected at all? Odo, because he has no respiratory system. That's amazing. I wish I was Odo. I wish I was Odo. I would never get bronchitis. I would never get a cold. I have no respiritory system. What a great.
Yeah, but then you would be sad and angry and traumatized from the way you were raised.
If Dr. Moore visited me,
Yeah, right. We already are. So, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
But you really want to give up your face?
For Odo face? Yeah, probably not. Can I be a hybrid? Can I be like half human, half Odo?
Maybe. I'm amazed that Renee could bring so much emotion through all that rubber
with all
on
that
his face.
Rubber on his face.
He really did.
Well, this episode, he had a lot of different incarnations of that makeup too.
Terry, he's completely, it's prosthetics over every part of his face.
Everything.
Except even his chin is also covered.
Oh,
everything,
yeah.
Right? There's not one.
Like here.
Right. There's not
you
one bit of his face.
It's his neck.
Yeah, it's his neck.
Sometimes I want them to put more makeup because you can see the red in a couple of shots here, which kind of like, oh, that irritated me.
But everything above the neck is covered.
Yes.
It's rubber. Mm-hmm. So how does he bring all that emotion?
It's
his eyes.
It's a hair piece that goes over
the rubber.
Yes.
Over the prosthetic
piece. He had great hair. He had great
hair. Yeah, he did.
Renee has had good hair, definitely. But it's just, you're right, Robbie. It's hard. It's like a mask. It's like a permanent mask on. For every episode that you do for 7 years, you're wearing a mask. And
did he wear
it proves
contacts?
You how much is in your eyes.
Yeah.
Did he wear contacts though? It just occurred to me.
I don't remember
him wearing glasses.
I think.
But I mean, like alien contacts.
No.
Or was that
his
real
those
eyes?
Are his eyes.
No.
Yeah.
That's why. Because it comes through his eyes.
It comes through his eyes.
If he had alien contacts. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, that would be different. But still.
Yeah, he did great. Well, Bashir's treating everybody. Odo's not affected. They do have samples that they stole. Just a reminder, they stole the dirt.
I'm a thief.
Dirt or was it moss? What was it exactly?
I'm a science thief.
Okay.
You really are.
I'm telling you, I think it was those little magnet
Can we introduce
things.
You as that? Terry Farrell, our science thief.
Well, they're going to study this dirt. They're going to see if it can help them treat these people that are suffering from this trip down there stealing stuff. Mm. Odo's very worried in the scene about Mora, which surprised me. I was like,
that was
I thought he was mad at him, but he clearly cares. And Sisko notices this when Odo leaves. And so he follows him out, go to the promenade. Again, great background work in the scene. It felt the best version of the promenade I think I've ever seen. Mm. Whatever the ADs and David Carson did, it was great. But they do a little walk and talk here. Sisko tells about his father's illness, which I hadn't heard much about Sisko's father. This is the first time I remember him talking about his parents.
Mm-hmm.
Correct. He doesn't.
First time he talks about when his father got sick, how he felt helpless because he couldn't do anything. Sisko's sharing all this, and Odo is very insistent to tell him Mora is not my father. So he's really denying that kind of relationship at this point. Great one-er though. This long lens shot as they walk forward, and it ended up on that line where Odo says, Mora's not my father, in a close-up. Then he leaves and it pans over to Sisko for the button of the scene. 5 stars.
It makes so much sense to me that we get to see the peak of how Odo feels in his heart about Mora with nobody looking, and still upholds his anger when everyone's looking at him.
Yeah.
Because it's private what he's feeling. And he clearly, like my poem, he isn't mature about these feelings. He hasn't worked them out or processed them. So he does not know how to handle all the feelings he's feeling. Well, he can't even articulate what he needs from Mora, which is to just, you know.
No, he's not able to even understand and reflect on his feelings to be able to share it. And that, you know, spoiler alert, that is what leads him to all of this stuff that's stuffed down, turns him into this monster later.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. You
know? Yeah. I would like to read a little excerpt from Star Trek Deep Space Nine Companion. When telling Odo the story about his father, Sisko seems to imply, without actually saying it, that his father had passed away after becoming ill. Joseph Sisko ultimately made 6 appearances in the series, his first one taking place almost exactly 2 years after this episode. Possibly because of the information disclosed in this episode, it is mentioned in the script of Homefront that several years earlier, Joseph fought a debilitating battle against a severe illness, barely surviving. He's never gotten back to full strength, but he's determined to live out the rest of his years. Yeah, I thought he was dead,
the way Sisko talks in
the
scene.
It sure did sound like he passed away, didn't it? When I
absolutely.
So, there you go.
Well, also the conversation got cut short.
It got cut off. So we don't know the
imagine how many. And think of how many times you have a conversation and maybe you hold your tongue while someone else is saying what they're thinking. And then you wanted to say what you're thinking, what you'd like to share. Yeah.
And you didn't get to.
And you know, they go off on the turbo lift.
Yeah. That happens all the time.
And you never finish that conversation.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Never finish it.
But it's really
turbo lift problem.
Turbo lift problem. But that Odo can't work out how to talk to Mora and talk about what he needs.
Yeah.
It's not really that crazy of a man problem. Speaking with men and talking about your feelings. It's just not an easy thing. So
I've never heard that before. You mean men don't talk about their feelings, Terry?
I'm not talking about the two of you.
I will talk about feelings.
You all are the rarest breed. And I love you guys.
So we go to the science lab next.
Yes.
I'm uncomfortable with my feelings. we go to the science lab
poor
next.
Me.
Yes. I love the tilt up. I made all these notes about David Carson's work because it was so good.
Yes.
The tilt up off the dirt, the little dome.
Yeah.
Just super cool and elegant opening. But O'Brien says that the life form is multiplying. He had to use a bigger Petri dish, this big dome. And Odo goes over. He's focused on the shrine. He's really obsessed with trying to figure out the wording. Is it connected to his people? He really wants to know. And O'Brien asks him, do you have any idea what it is? And Odo admits he's hoping it's a key to understanding who he is.
Mm.
And he leaves. And then O'Brien sort of also wanders over to it. And there's this nice tilt up to the top of the obelisk. And again, it's really well done, the directing in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was great.
Do you know what I noticed?
Yes.
Everybody helped. I didn't even need to come back. Everybody helped with the science information. Like O'Brien's a scientist. Yeah. Odo's a scientist. Kara's a scientist.
I did notice that.
It was like, what am I doing there? I was like, yeah, we got to get Dax back. Let me go on vacation.
Terry, is it too many scientists? Ruin the last. Is there too many cooks? Lab. Ruin the kitchen? Yes.
Yes, there was a little There's part a of me that got my scientists. Nose like a little bit over here.
Yeah,
it just moved a little bit over.
Understood.
Yeah.
Yeah, even Odo, the detective, he's talking about energy fields and power surges. He's like all about.
Too.
He's a scientist. Yeah.
He's a liquid.
And Dr. Bashir.
And Bashir can do anything.
Bashir can do anything. He's proven he's a jack of all trades.
He can play racquetball. He can do everything.
He can.
He can lead a commando unit. He's good.
Stick around. There's lots more after this message from our sponsor.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The next scene is in Cisco's bedroom, and he's sleeping hard, and Kira calls. Kira to Cisco, go ahead, Major, he says groggily. Sorry to bother you, but we need you up here in the science lab. And these wake-up scenes? We've all done them. I thought Avery did a great job. Because normally,
me too. I paid attention.
Yeah.
I hate it when somebody looks like they're trying to pretend they were sleepy, and it's like, no.
Yeah.
Do you guys
just
remember?
Get into the bed early and close your eyes.
Yeah.
You guys just remember, be your own stand-in, for God's sakes.
You guys remember the show Star Search? They used to have an acting competition where they were big three and actors would do a scene. If I was in charge of programming, my thing would have been, okay, we bring three actors in and all of you do a wake-up scene. Let's see who does the best wake-up.
It's not easy to do. Yeah. It's hard.
No. Wake-ups and death.
And because you got to, death is not easy.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Especially when you have no experience of it from before. So
hopefully none of us do.
None of us have life experience of how to die. So we have to imagine what it would be like to lose consciousness and then fade to black, right? So,
although Harry Kim died 8 times. As
I did.
We discovered,
so I'm a pro. I am a pro, Robbie. Yes. I have a PhD in how to die.
In death.
In death. And I've been doing it so long now. Yep. All right.
Cisco wakes up, we go to the science lab and the place is trashed.
Oh my goodness.
And the big Petri dish that they had to get the bigger one. It's kind of
The Petri dome
explosion.
Is all done. Yes.
Yeah. It's the dome has this weird hole in it.
It is weird, isn't it? It's like, why is it splayed out?
It's like melted or something.
Yeah.
In a weird way.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, off of that tragedy of the science lab being destroyed, basically we go to a commercial break, a little break. We come back to the lab. They're trying to figure out what happened. They say the doors were all locked. It looks like maybe this thing went up through the vent system. And as Kira goes, Odo stops her and he wants her to review security feed records and also the heat sensor log. So he's starting to be a little sciencey here. Mm-hmm. Terry, how do you feel about it?
I'm not there, am I?
Mm-mm.
They don't really. I mean,
you would have thought of it much earlier than Odo.
Much earlier.
Yeah, I agree.
I probably would have been in the lab when it happened.
That's true.
See, that's the problem. If you were there, Terry, there would be no episode. You would have answered everything
have
very quickly
in scene.
One scene. And
it would have all been done.
Everyone go home. And that would have been it. So that's why.
It's a wrap.
Yeah.
Well, yes. Odo wants the heat sensor logs checked. And this is when Mora wakes up. But there was a funny beat in this scene where Dax does say she shows up later on and she says Dr. Bashir wouldn't listen to me and he hid my clothes so I wouldn't leave, and she says I had to sneak out of my quarters in a hospital gown that wouldn't close in the back. First of all, you were very funny in it. Second of all,
haven't they
fixed hospital gowns in the future?
No, because it makes sense, right? Well, Dr. Sisko says to me, did Dr. Bashir give you permission to be up and about?
Yes. But your delivery was very funny.
Thank you. I liked how he directed me in this episode. I liked that this was kind of cool because I didn't have a lot of my opinions, or Dax wasn't very opinionated in it. It was much more she's with her science hat on,
mm-hmm.
and this is what's happening. So that was fun to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought you were great. And a little bit of comedy. Again, our comedy.
And again, you know, Bill Dial. Bill Dial wrote this little hospital gown line in there. Very funny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. In the infirmary, Mora is concerned about the life form escaping. He says that he wants to help out. He knows that the life form has escaped, and he says that he knows more about shapeshifters than anyone else in this sector. And mm-hmm. Odo is arguing with him. And you know what? This whole scene to me was father-son arguing over who's going to take the car for the evening or something like that. It was very mm-hmm. much like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to be running this investigation. So again, you know that there's a lot of pain in Odo's past, feeling like he was kept or in prison, basically.
And Odo's I'm a big boy now.
Yes, he's saying, I'm a big boy now. Exactly. That is the subtext of this entire scene. I am an adult. I can put on my pants on my own. I don't have to have you controlling my life because I'm a man. Yeah, that's what this scene is. But basically, Odo says, I'm taking care of this.
Dr. Weld still has not regained consciousness.
Which but Odo's is confident.
Shiny
he's
hair?
Like,
yeah.
Odo's very confident. Yeah, he hasn't woken up, but Bashir's going to take care of him. And I'm on team Odo here because Bashir can do anything.
Right.
Yeah, but I think it's nice, though, that they had that happen.
Yeah.
So that to really, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, but that gas was really dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, then we go to a conduit where Miles is on the trail in a tube. Mm-hmm. He should have a partner, you know, like buddy system.
Absolutely. He's all by himself. What is he
doing? Definitely. Especially when we don't even know what he's after.
He's chasing an alien that was kidnapped, I want to remind everybody.
Yes.
And this alien could have turned into something dangerous or multiplied
We have no idea.
This is the horror movie scene right here.
Has he heard the sound yet?
Not yet. Doesn't
hear it until the end of it, but it's in this sequence he does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the horror movie scene. This is all about you thinking he's about to get, you know, jumped by the monster at this point. You don't know what's happening to him.
They think it might maybe that this thing is absorbing mm-hmm. low frequency RF energy. Do you know what RF energy is?
No idea.
Okay, me neither. And Miles finds a breach and touches it, and then goo pours out and he goes, wait, it's dead, right? Yes. And I'm thinking, no, now it's like Odo, right?
Yes.
I thought so too. It looked like Odo.
How does he know it's dead?
Well, now we've
gone
from being that grainy stuff. And I thought, oh, maybe Odo started out like the grainy stuff.
Right.
And then he grows and turned into the goo.
Yeah. Did O'Brien scan the goo with a tricorder? Yes or no, guys? I don't remember.
I don't think so.
Because he just looks at it drip out and go, it's dead, like that. How do you know it's dead?
Yeah.
He doesn't even
know. I don't know.
That's very confusing.
That would be one of those,
there should be Dax in there. Dax should be there with him.
Yes.
She's
the show would be over, though. Again, the show would end immediately.
Wouldn't it be his job to scoop up the goo and bring it back to the science lab?
You would think so.
But then we would have found out it was Odo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, end of the episode.
Well, here's the thing. Before we go to the station log, I noticed another David Carson shout out.
Ah.
They only had one small conduit with a backing, a photo backing you could see in the back. So it was probably 10 feet long.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
15 or something. But he was able to reuse that. Like they cut away in the sequence to the bridge. Or to the ops, and then he'd move him back and continue the same shot. So he was reusing a very small set and had him crawl out of it a couple of times. So it seemed like he was going from one opening to another. Mm-hmm. It was very well done. It was clearly a small, very small set that he made feel much bigger.
Really long. Yeah. Good job.
Yeah.
100%.
Now we go to the station log. And we hear that its engineering crews have been working for over 15 hours searching the conduits. There have been no additional incidents and no further evidence of the alien life form has been found anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever O'Brien found, that was it. It's not around. They can't find it.
It's gone.
All gone. Back in the infirmary, Bashir says the life form could not survive on its own outside of that little dome, little petri dish.
Petri dome.
But it did, though.
It did something.
Because it crawled its little squishy butt from the science lab all the way out into wherever the heck
O'Brien went.
Conduit 7B.
Splat.
Bashir says he'll ask Maura, who's doing better now. Maura's feeling much better, so that's good news, everybody. Dax suggests Aractogino to Bashir in the scene. Hey, feel like Aractogino? And Bashir, very forward of him, says, "Your replicator or mine?"
Ruins it.
I agree.
See, why can't he get to know me first? Why do you have to go there? What the hell is it with those kind of guys?
And then even weirder, after you leave, Dax, Bashir has this monologue. She enjoys it. She actually gets some kind of perverse pleasure out of it. One of these days, I'm going to stop chasing her, and then we'll see. What? That's so weird.
It was weird that he talked to himself.
What? Those are such head games. But who does that? Has any other character talked to himself like that?
There's a way to do it. Like if he was able to be busy doing something, kind of like, you know, quoting her, no, replicator and something like that.
As he's doing his work.
What if it was
as he's doing his work? But it seemed like he stopped and had this dramatic monologue to no one.
Let me ask both of you this. Could he have just sat there looking and then all you'd heard was an internal thought of him saying that better than him actually mouthing it? You know what I'm saying? Or is that weird?
DS9. I don't think that's a Star Trek.
DS9 can't do that either. To have the internal. It's like a station log in your head that you hear with the character right there, basically.
But you know what I think, too? When you think about a shot like this, if you had extra time.
Yes.
You could have him moving and make another shot out of him doing something as he's talking to himself or cleaning up or whatever.
Right. So it's not as weird.
Right. But when that feels disingenuous, those moments, I often wonder, and I think you guys will agree, that time's too short. We got to get the shot. This is not where we want to spend our time or money.
Just say the words and let's move on.
Yeah, it won't matter. It's this part of the television show doesn't matter in that respect.
Yeah. Okay.
That makes sense.
If it were a film, it would be different, but it's not. We've got 42 minutes and we have 10 days to shoot it.
Yeah. That's right.
After his very deep personal monologue to himself, he hears a noise. He goes to check it out, check on his patients. And the lights are all off, by the way. And then behind him, we see this tentacle come down.
An octopus's tentacle, basically.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. And he's not aware of it. Great horror movie moment. He gets grabbed suddenly by the tentacle. Tentacle wraps around, he grabs some kind of laser tool, some scalpel tool or something, and kind of forces it over to shoot at the monster, and then the monster goes back up through the vent,
right? And that was very difficult to watch.
And he was sweating and
The tentacle was okay, but the actual shot of the of Odo's as that entity going up through the air vent was really blocky and not good. So
it was not good.
No.
Coming down was great.
Yeah.
And around the neck was fine, but leaving was horrible. It was like they ran out of money at that point.
I agree.
Yeah.
It bumped me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Okay.
That's why the special effects man wasn't happy about it.
He wasn't happy.
He shouldn't have seen it. Because it's too impossible to, we didn't have the technology then.
No.
Yeah,
I would have just had just the last sliver of tentacle go up through the vent, you know, like a practical, like an actual tentacle.
You know what?
Thing
I bet that's all he wanted to do.
That's
like,
all
let's
you
just
needed
do that.
To do. Yeah. That would have worked. Okay.
Well, that's where the commercial break would go in the old days. But we just had a brief pause and then we're back in the infirmary with forensics have arrived. O'Brien scanning the vent. Bashir explains everything that happened. Bashir's explaining to Sisko, Odo, Miles, and Maura. And I wrote down, why isn't Kira there? Like, this is a security issue. Kira would be there in a second.
Yeah. That's kind of weird.
Yeah, it's kind of strange.
She is the FO and she's not there.
Yeah. I mean, maybe she's on the bridge. I think they do call her from here at some point. So maybe she's, or the, or ops, maybe she's running ops in charge. Maybe right
she's
now.
An ops.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All she's right. An ops.
But Odo asks if it was warm, asks Bashir, was it warm? And, Bashir says, yeah, a little warm. And so he thinks maybe it was another thermal distortion, temperature distortion.
Mm-hmm.
Dax does find in the scene some organic residue for the first time. They didn't find that before.
Because I wasn't there.
Exactly.
Clearly.
Well, either this thing is morphed into something organic or it's not the same thing.
Oh.
Hmm. Yeah.
They're
trying to figure this all out.
Yes.
Dax finds this organic residue. Sisko says, let's go to Red Alert. And Mora hears in the scene them refer to Odo as constable for the first time. Mm-hmm. And he tells Odo that he thinks it's a term of affection that Odo just doesn't want to accept.
Yeah.
So he's kind of doing a little therapy on Odo.
Well, I wanted to say too, well, hang on. It's not just affection. It's also a term of respect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Odo doesn't seem to like, because he says it's a nickname that I barely tolerate.
Yes, but he also can barely tolerate Mora at this moment.
Yes, he can definitely barely tolerate
Mora. So it's making it even worse.
Yeah.
What do you think Odo would rather be called? Just security chief?
Hey, you.
Or, hey, chief, security chief. See, no, constable sounds way better.
I don't remember. I feel like there was something in the pilot or... in the very beginning, that he wanted to be called.
Like commissioner? Something different.
I don't remember now. There was an episode where, I don't know, it was like somebody was trying to take over his job.
The Texan guy, you know,
the cowboy Starfleet guy.
Yes.
I want to spin a quick yarn for you, young folks. Yeah.
That guy was funny.
That guy.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
That episode. Okay, I have to look back at that one. All right, where are we, guys?
We go to the promenade. Mora and Odo are walking again. Mora thinks. He says in the scene, you know, your police work, your detective work, and my science work have a lot in common. So another kind of father-son, like, hey, the things you love are kind of like the things I love. Like, maybe you got that from me or something like that.
He's trying so hard to connect to Odo this whole time.
Yeah.
This
really
whole
is.
Time. Please, I want a deep connection with you.
Yeah.
Well, he does, you know, put it all on the table in the scene. He says how proud he is of Odo and asks Odo, do you know that?
Yeah.
Like, do you know how proud I am of you? Mm-hmm. And Odo's response is to grunt, which I love. Renee's
classic. Because he resents him right now. Right now he's resenting how he's being treated. So every little thing, it's just hitting wrong. Nothing's going to hit right till they deal with this.
And we've all experienced this in our own lives too, in a certain
this.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that Mora really, not that I'm going to make, you know, one person right or wrong, but Mora is trying with all his flaws. He's trying to be emotionally honest and Odo is just stuffing all of these emotions. I mean, that's what's going to lead to him
losing it. Yeah.
He's stuffing it. He's just not opening up to these invitations.
He's pushing it down, and then it's going to explode.
Yeah. Because he doesn't know how to handle it.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it was already probably way up here before Mora even got to the
showed
station.
Showed up. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And now it's like,
well, he never dealt with it. Yeah. When he.
It's out of the frame.
Definitely. I mean, he's had these issues when he was at the Institute. When he left the Institute, he still had those issues, but he wasn't around Dr. Mora. Yeah. Now Dr. Mora just reignited everything, you know, all that stuff that was pushed down back then is still there. It's still present. So he has to
deal with PTSD.
Yeah.
Big time.
He needs some trauma therapy.
He does.
We go to the science lab next. Odo and Mora check in with Dax, our science genius.
Who's okay looking too?
Yeah,
who ain't too shabby on the eyes either? How's that? Is that okay?
Thank you.
Sure.
Well, they check him with Dax on the DNA comparisons, and Odo asks Dax when he first comes in. He goes, "Hey, where's the shrine? Why is the shrine over there?"
Yeah,
and Dax says, "Oh, it was in my way, so I had it moved."
Yes.
And
yeah, but he sounds ticked off at me. Like I
yes.
Really?
It's like, who gives a shit?
Is that what you guys got? You guys got that? He was pissed. Yeah,
he was annoyed about it.
But why though? Why is it? Why
is he protective? He thinks that it might be a connection to his.
Okay. He didn't want anyone to touch his key to his past.
Valuable. Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah. Okay. And he is very sticky right now.
He is.
He's just very got a lot of pins and needles sticking out of him.
His anxiety, projecting it onto trying to control the shrine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everything.
Everything. But Odo leaves, and then Mora suggests maybe they should analyze the organic strains.
Right.
And while they wait, Mora shares how much he misses Odo. And then the results come in. Dax is very good. She's super fast. And the results come in, and the DNA results that they were waiting on, the DNA comparisons are not matching. Doesn't seem like the sample from the dirt is the same as this organic stuff. But Dax says, well, maybe we'll look at the DNA match in our database of other life forms. Maybe it's not the dirt, but maybe we'll find out what it is. But it's going to take a couple hours, so it's not going to be fast. All right, security office is next. Mora comes into Odo while he's waiting for these to search the database of other life forms. Mm-hmm. Goes to see Odo, and Odo says that the other doctor is going to be fine. Shiny hair guy.
Shiny hair Matt McKenzie.
Yeah.
Yep. Yay.
And says Mora doesn't seem very happy when he gets this news that the other doctor's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And Mora first starts with telling Odo what an amazing, an incredible life form Odo is. But he says, you know what? I just saw the organic sample with Dax, and I've seen it before. It's you, Odo.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun.
He's busted him. Yeah. He did. And I thought that's interesting. He didn't tell Dax. He could have said, I know that sample. I know what that is. That's Odo. But he didn't say it.
Right.
So he's protecting Odo here.
Right.
Yeah.
From Dax.
From everybody. He wants to go to Odo first and say, what's up, dude?
Yeah.
But we come back after another old-fashioned commercial.
Sorry. Yeah, I need to ask both of you this. So that little thing they found on the planet. Little dirt that was moving around. Okay. They brought that back into the lab. That's covered by the Petri dome. It's in the Petri dish. It keeps getting bigger. They get a bigger Petri dome. It eventually escapes. That is also Odo. That little sample is Odo too?
No.
No. What is that little sample then?
It's not Odo. It's not.
What happens to that thing then?
I think it dies. Oh,
so that's the thing that was the goo that fell down and died, is what you're saying, that O'Brien
it's
found.
All a little confusing.
It is a little confusing. See, I
thought that weird dirt turned into Odo.
Yes, I thought the dirt was Odo.
Or turned into a changeling. Maybe that's a better way of putting it.
Yes. That's, I think, was the
like
confusing
the dirt was
part. Because
baby changeling, and it exploded out. And then when O'Brien saw the goo come down, I thought, that dirt turned into a changeling.
And now that's the residue of that more metamorphosis. But Robbie, you're saying that dirt died and that goo is the residue.
I think
of
that's
the
dirt. Residue. Because later on they say the dirt and this other organic sample, which is Odo.
Odo,
the organic
yes.
is Odo.
Yes.
The dirt, they have some similarities. They could be distant cousins, but they're not the same thing.
Oh.
So I think the dirt was a distant cousin of Odo, but it's not his people.
Okay.
He's getting close.
So sort of
but
like us and other animals.
Yes.
Not necessarily chimpanzees.
Primates
that's too
or something.
Close, but yeah.
Other mammals.
Okay.
So we might have another some, mammal. But it's too far to give Odo what he wants.
Well, see, that's why that's why I felt this episode was a little confusing for me, honestly, Robbie. It wasn't as clear cut for me.
Yeah.
That this was
they needed more Dax to explain the science.
Clearly. All right, let's go.
Yeah. So we come back and Mora's telling Odo, he's giving him all this evidence that it's Odo. Odo's been doing this and basically tells him he's turned into like a Jekyll and Hyde.
Yeah.
And Odo, first of all, Odo wants Bashir to look at him. He panics. And Mora says, Bashir won't understand what's going on with you. I know you best. I've studied you. I'm your dad. I'm your father. They argue. This is a great emotional scene, and I was waiting for this scene to happen.
Yeah. And it's hard for him to hold containment as well, because he's melting at the same time that he's talking and arguing, because he's losing it.
Yeah.
he's losing it.
The makeup through this whole series is genius.
It's so good. Genius. It really plays into the story.
It's like you could, it looks so real that it was. Yeah. Yeah. Melting off of him.
Yeah. He was melting into something else. Yes.
Entirely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The more emotional he gets, it felt like a Jekyll and Hyde pitch. That's what's going on, is whatever, something has affected him and making him turn into a monster. And when he got emotional, it sort of triggered all of this, the effects.
It made me so sad for him.
I know.
Yeah.
And at the end, when he slams his hand on the console, and there's electricity going through them, they're morphing like Jekyll and Hyde. He's turning into that monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he turns into the monster and screams roars at Mora, and Mora's terrified. Mm-hmm. And off of that dramatic moment, we go to Ops, and they can't reach Odo. They're trying to reach him. Mora arrives, though. I thought he was dead in the last scene. I thought he's done, but somehow he got out of there and tells them that this creature is Odo, that what they're looking for is Odo. And he lays it all out, the whole thing. And it sounded to me like a detective sort of, laying out a case like Odo would do.
Yeah.
So you see this father son sort of tone
connection.
Yeah. 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 Anyway, Sisko decides to set a trap, a force field. He asks Miles, can you build a force field to hold this thing, this monster that's Odo? He wants to do it right on the promenade where he's got room to work. And
Mora volunteers to be the bait.
Yeah, yeah, he's going to be the bait. He does say in this scene, Mora says that incident when the life form broke out of the thing, he thinks that that was an attempt to rescue these life forms. So maybe that weird break was caused by
Odo pulling the dirt out. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll buy that.
Yeah. That makes sense. So Odo's been doing this all along. The whole thing. All him. Every step has been Odo. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We go to the promenade. They're preparing. Sisko tells Mora he's not going to have any officers there for backup. He doesn't want to scare Odo. So, just get him to the force field, walk him back to this force field we've got ready to go. And they leave. And that's when Sisko tells Kira, everyone needs to set their phasers to maximum stun. And
then he says, but if that doesn't bring him down, we then set the phasers to kill.
Yeah.
Which Kira's like, Commander, are you sure? I mean, literally, they're saying,
yeah,
kill Odo is what they're saying.
Who she's had the longest relationship
of
with
all.
Besides Quark, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
They've all been up there before we got there.
Yeah.
Very difficult for her.
Very difficult. Great suspense shots as they wait, this horror movie moment. There's all these cuts, shots around the promenade of people getting into position and waiting.
Just nervous.
All the lights are dim.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Really great shot. As they're peering from their hiding places and waiting, they hear the sound, this monster, this kind of massy goo monster drops to the floor and rears up and gets caught by this force field. Ultimately, he's backed, Mora backs him into it.
Yeah. I wouldn't even say monster. I'd say blob. It looks like a big blob. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Yeah.
It was a little unfortunate.
Yeah. They could have, boy, visual effects.
I feel
effects
bad for the
been...
special effects guy.
Totally. This episode could have been 30 times better if visual effects were on point. If you think about that, you'd be like, whoa. I mean, this could have been amazing, but they didn't
think about how much
that.
They spent even with his makeup. There must have been
something else
going on.
Yes, yeah, of course.
Yeah. Yes. But this thing bounces around inside the force field. Mm. It's just terrified and panicking.
Yeah.
And Mora in the midst of this is just heartbroken to see this happening. And he says, I've done it to you again. I've made you a prisoner. What have I done, dear God?
Yeah.
Mora really cares about
him. He does.
He never intended to cause that trauma.
Yeah.
As parents don't, we don't intend to smother our children when we overparent them as they get old enough and we know better to trust them, and we still want a parent, and that's when it's time to get a puppy.
That's it.
But as Robbie and I both know.
He just needed a puppy. But in this scene, you definitely become Team Mora again. You're on his side at this point. You see this he's going through pain. This is his son, essentially, right?
Well, Sisko sees it too. Sisko sees Mora's pain and the situation, and he says, drop the force field.
Right.
And O'Brien does, and that's when the creature, this mass, turns back into Odo.
Into Odo,
And Bashir runs over.
Did you notice when he turns back into Odo, does Odo have a comm badge on?
Oh, I don't know.
Because he shouldn't, right? If you think about it, if he forms that body, whatever, he's got to put a comm badge on. He doesn't. Do you think he forms the comm badge itself and all the tech?
Oh God, that's such a good point. No, you don't. No. It's an actual electric.
You'd have to put it on. It, a little
metal
thing.
It's something completely
separate from him. So if they have him with the comm badge,
separate from all of us.
Yes, exactly. So if he comes back into human form, I'm going to look.
Yeah, because you know, otherwise he wouldn't even need the comm badge because it would be right in his head.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly.
Always be there. Yeah. All right. Wow. Sorry. Continue.
Well, Bashir runs an instrument over him, and he's in bad shape. He's going to have to go take care of him. And Mora says at the end of the scene, we've got a lot to talk about, Odo. So I think that's an understatement.
Yes.
Odo's lying there with his melty face looking up at his mentor slash dad. Okay.
But we go in the infirmary. Odo is healed. Basically, we find out all traces of the gas that affected him have been removed. So even though he doesn't have lungs, he was affected by the gas.
Yeah, it attached itself to his cellular, on a cellular level.
But this is the first time we realize that it's the gas that caused him to do this, correct?
Yes. Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So was that the effect? Was this the time to learn it? Yes. I guess it is.
Seems a little late, but
it's a little late. Yeah.
But that's how we just,
It just kind of came out of left field for me. It was sort of like, hey, yeah, it was the gas that's been removed. He'll be fine. Okay.
It'll be fine.
How did you remove the gas?
If 45 Dax minutes ago, we could have.
Dax already knew it, but unfortunately, she wasn't in the scene, so she couldn't tell us that earlier.
No.
So,
I was out cold from the gas.
Yes. There you go.
It seems like when they did scans of Odo.
Yeah.
When they all first returned, they would have found something.
The gas in his.
I think they didn't, though. Why would they check him out if they're assuming it was all an inhaled effect?
That's right. That's an assumption, though. If they should have scanned him as well to see if he was affected.
I thought Bashir did scan him, but maybe not.
I think that would be the rationale where they could say, well, it makes sense that we didn't know because we just thought he was fine. He said he was fine. He seemed fine.
Right.
It would have helped you, Garrett, in this moment if earlier they had said something like, well, Odo, we scanned you. And even though you don't have lungs, some of the gas was absorbed into your body, but it should, you know, dissipate over time and doesn't seem to have affected you. If they had said something like that, it would set this
in that earlier scene. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But then again, that if you set that up and all this weird stuff happened, you also might have felt like
ruin the story.
Yeah. Maybe. Or you kind of, I don't know.
Okay.
Like you put it to bed. I mean, in 42 minutes, the way you tell a story is different than if you haven't. Two hours.
Okay. No, I guess my point is the pacing for me was off because it was paced a certain way. And then all of a sudden everything's tied up really neatly at the end, very quickly. It was the gas and everything's fine. And he's okay. And I'm so sorry that I treated you this way. Okay. Sorry, Dad / Dr. Mora. Bye.
It did feel like a very quick ending.
Resolution. Very fast.
Have we come to yet?
No,
we're there.
Not yet. We're at the end.
I mean, we're there. Odo's healed. The gas is gone. And then this is Odo immediately jumps into apologizing to Mora for everything. Yeah. He had no idea that this was him. It was Dr. Jekyll or Mr. Hyde or one of the other personalities.
Yeah.
And then Mora apologizes to Odo about everything.
Right back. Yeah. And I love how he reaches out. He says, I would like from time to time, I could contact you, we can talk about things that matter. I love this. He goes, from time to time, we could talk about things that matter to you, to us. Mm-hmm. To you, to us. And then Odo's like, I'd like that. So there's a resolution in their relationship. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
They have they've squashed whatever ill feelings that were there before, I think. So it's a nice
thing. Well, Mora's great in this scene because when Odo says, you know, I'm really sorry, I had no idea. And Mora says, you had to speak in a voice loud enough for me to hear.
Yes.
Like he's acknowledging.
Yes. Yeah. That's the key.
I think
that
so
is
too.
The key. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's when Dr. Mora realizes, oh, he'd been handling it all wrong.
Yeah.
From day one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you look at it sort of with that lens of watching a teenager,
yeah,
you know, Odo's older than that. But if you think about it, if he's made his appearance try to mimic Mora and he's acting out in this episode like a teenager that's trying to get their independence, who mm-hmm. never individuated.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. He's always been attached and it feels lost and alone and misunderstood. And mm-hmm. I know, oh, Robbie, don't. When you do that, you're going to make me cry.
Or
Robbie, because Robbie's like a sweet teddy bear.
Robbie's a sweet teddy bear?
I told you, I'm in touch with my feelings.
He
Can
is.
We start a fantasy football
he
league?
His and ass
that's
off to
that's
get there.
Going to be your nickname, Sweet Teddy Bear. 92, whatever.
That'll be my intro.
Sweet Teddy Bear 64. Well, that'll be your.
Oh, golly,
and also,
I hope that's okay.
Your other host is Robert Duncan McNeil, aka Sweet Teddy Bear 64. There he is. I love it.
Well, I love that. God. I love the happy ending. It does feel like there's great character growth for Odo in this, and for us, for the audience.
For the audience.
Understand it.
For the audience. For
yeah.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
What is your lesson or moral of this story, Robbie McNeil, and then Terry, and then me?
I have two lessons. My first lesson would be don't steal people's stuff.
or don't beam people's stuff away. Okay.
Don't steal their shrines and their dirt.
In their dirt. All right. That's lesson one. What's lesson two?
Lesson two was getting people to truly hear you is not easy. Getting, you know, that you have to do some work to really find a way to communicate honestly what you're feeling. Because Odo didn't know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He had to turn into a monster to do it.
Yeah.
And that's not a great solution, you know, turning into a monster. Better to find a better way to, you know, a less dramatic way.
Mm-hmm.
Terry?
Well, mine was... never assume, because you've known someone, never assume they're in the same place they were at the last time you were with them, because people grow.
Yeah.
And to go on to the heel of getting people to truly hear you is not easy. It's, I think that also goes with taking responsibility for your own self-awareness, your feelings, articulating how you feel. So on that, getting people to truly hear you, it isn't easy. But if you also haven't done emotional work, your worked on your trauma or who you are and how do you want to express yourself and move through the world, if you haven't done those things, well, then you're going to miss out too, because people can't read your mind. You have to express who you are, what you want, what you need to be, you know, your whole self.
Yeah.
You need to trust yourself and respect yourself and put yourself first in that respect. Yeah. Because if you don't know who you are, you're not going to find out who somebody else is, really, if you're always hiding who you are.
Yeah, it makes me think of a friend of mine said something once that stuck with me. He said, there's only three things that we're responsible for in life: what we do, what we say, and what we feel. And I was like, okay, I get the first two, but what I feel, that's not my responsibility. And he was like, no, it actually is.
Yeah.
You have to understand what you're feeling and then how that affects what you do and what you say.
Yeah.
That's the only things you have ways of.
Because you can control how you react to how you feel, but you can't control how you feel. But if you know that feeling is a moment that you're being triggered, then you know it's not about the person that you're having this experience right now with.
Yeah.
But they're making you relive something from the past. Now, if you've done your trauma work, you can still feel that and kind of go, okay, I could say to you, Robbie, I know this isn't you. I am feeling triggered right now.
Yeah.
Can I just go take a minute to regulate? And then can we continue the conversation? Because I need to get back in my body.
Yeah.
That's not something that people who haven't gone through therapy or a 12-step or any yeah. kind of, I don't know, self-education.
Yeah.
How else do I put that?
Yeah.
They don't have that available.
And Odo certainly has not done any trauma
no,
work.
No. Right?
Yeah.
And they should be pretty good at EMDR and all that trauma therapy yeah. by yeah. then.
By
right?
then.
PTSD should be like, we can figure that out.
Yeah. Yeah. Stick around. There's lots more after this message from our sponsor.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Garrett, what about
yeah,
you? What's
yeah,
your lesson?
Sure. Just really for everyone to be diligent about refraining from pushing those hardships of life and emotions deeper and deeper down and not dealing with them. And
yeah.
which is pretty much what happened in this episode for Odin.
Yeah.
He just had all this stuff pent up. And we're lucky that when he did explode, we had no casualties from
yeah,
that,
it could
right?
have been much worse.
Could have been much worse.
Oh, yeah.
And
or he could have been killed.
We would have really missed Bashir.
Exactly. When people snap, usually there's casualties and it's not a good thing. So so really the lesson from this episode is just please do not push your emotions down and suppress them. You must
process
them.
Process them.
Yeah. And a lot of times if you don't have the money to even, if let's just say that you can't see a therapist once a week, write down what you're feeling. It's really weird, but when you write, putting it on paper for some reason gives you a whole nother perspective and you see and you can actually see the matrix, quote unquote, when you write things
down.
It's
part of it for
sure.
It's
a way of therapy in a way, you know, to write.
Talking about it too, gets it to your prefrontal lobe so that you're aware of what you're feeling.
Agreed. But if you have no one to talk about with it, you know, if there's no one close enough to you that you can talk about, if you're a loner and you need it, I'm just saying writing down can be.
Writing it down is good. There's also like, if you don't have a therapist or money for therapy, there's affinity groups. There's groups.
Yeah.
12 step.
Yes.
12
you know, 12 step is
free.
probably the most well known. That's free. But there's all kinds of, you know, women's groups, men's groups.
Yes.
There are hotlines you can call.
Right. Yeah. So there are resources where no one has to spend a dollar on, correct?
Yeah.
And they can get
it. Yes.
Absolutely.
100%.
Yeah. Good.
Agreed. Agreed.
Excellent.
Now, our Patreon poll winner for the theme and moral of this episode is submitted by Anne. Mm-hmm. Family is complicated.
Yes, it is, Anne. Thank you.
That's definitely the theme, not really a moral, but a theme of this episode. Family is complicated. Mm-hmm.
Family is very complicated.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for tuning into this episode of our podcast. Join us next time when we will be recapping and discussing the episode Armageddon Game with none other than our intelligent and super fast science officer, Dax, a.k.a. Terry Farrell, joining us and hosting for that one.
Whoop, whoop.
All right. For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material and a little bit of more of that super fast science officer, Terry Farrell.